นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะพุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนะมัสสามิSay about nothing. We practice doing nothing consciously, don't we? Sitting and not doing anything except inside, perhaps watching. And then what we can do when we're meditating can differ. We can be very active, following.A meditation technique, maybe watching the mind in a particular way, or practicing concentration on an object, or body scanning, where we can get very detailed from toe to ankle bone to finger and so on, or we can sit and also internally just watch and make a point of not doing anything, not particularly following a technique, but rather cultivating awareness of things as they are. And so generally we'll start our practice in ways where we need the help of a meditation object. We take the breathing or the body or some particular technique like a mantra, butto,to give ourselves focus and some structure and a reminder that, so that we know when we're present and when we've drifted away. And then eventually, even that perhaps is not necessary, so we can just sit and observe. And so why? Why do nothing consciously?And those of us who've been practicing for a long time know that while it might sound easy, it's not at all easy not to do anything. In fact, that's one of the reasons why, is because we're not necessarily aware how much we are bound by the habits that we've established. Our habits of our physical habits, yes, but...more importantly, our mental habits, our emotional habits. And so by trying to just stop and stay stopped, it's easier to see the movement that then happens when things don't stop. And normally we don't see that. So the practice of awareness is something we're not just doing when we're sitting in meditation, but it's something in a Buddhist life we're trying to, as much as possible, do all the time.So that we bring our whole life into the meditation rather than section our practice off just into the times when we can do our formal sitting practice. And that takes a commitment which is really a deeper part of the practice maybe, because once we start bringing our whole life into it, then we realize how much we don't really want to do that. It's kind of...It's nice to be able to practice meditation and peace of mind and insight perhaps sometimes, and then also stay deluded sometimes. Not because we want to be deluded, but because delusion is delicious. It's very, you know, there's all kinds of things we like.And all kinds of things we don't like, and it's not easy to find what it takes to disengage and commit ourselves to not following that momentum, those habits. So that's why, isn't it, that we have a teaching. The Buddha gave us a teaching which encompasses.All of our life. It's not just about a meditation technique. It's not just about a conceptual, philosophical way of looking at the world. It's not even just about changing our perceptions about the world. It's something we have to engage in, and you can say it's something we have to do. And the doing really is often, it includes a not doing. It's both, isn't it? Because it also includes active efforts to cultivate kindness and compassion and generosity in our relationships with others, in towards ourselves, at the same time, discovering the wisdom to know when not to do, not to follow the compulsions that we have to act or react. So the practice of mindfulness, which is all the rage these days, is a really profound practice, and it's the centerpiece, and yet only a piece of a whole life practice, which includes all of ourselves and all of our relationships, and that's a bit too much to take on, really, if we think about it too much. So it's good not to think about it too much, but just do what we can as we can, and whenever we notice that in this particular moment I can be a little bit more careful, in this particular moment I can be a little bit more kind, to know that that really is the practice, which is leading in the direction of bringing our whole life into it. Not to think that we're failing if 99% of the time we're not practicing and only 1% of the time we are, but really appreciating that that 1% is the path, moving in the right direction, because mostly, most people, most beings in the world aren't. Mostly we're caught in a web of habit, even if they're skillful habits, even if we have pretty good lives and we're pretty good people, generally. If we're caught in all of that, then we're not free to sort of release ourselves from it all when it moves in a direction we don't want to move with. When it all starts going bad, when it starts falling apart, when we get old, when we get sick. So while things are going well, it's good to practice. And also while things are not going well, it's good to practice. And practicing meaning what we're doing now, or what we're not doing now, how we are with what is happening. And so that is something we can actually get a handle on, because it's not my whole life in the sense of however many years and however many activities that I might experience or be involved in, but it's this whole moment now as much as possible. My whole life really is just all as much of this, just this moment. And then again, now, a new moment, as much of this. And so just keeping it to one moment at a time keeps it doable and manageable, and yet it also takes commitment, and a lot of the practice then is finding ways that keep us in touch with that which inspires us, and to notice what supports being able to stay committed to being with our lives in a way which is coming from like the Buddha's way, a way of practice, rather than just simply my way, my habitual reactions and actions. So finding ways that where we can stay with it, and that's where having the support structures like events like this, a weekly meditation workshop, or coming to the monastery, or having our own retreats or groups that we go to, or our own daily practice at home, reading, whatever we do, these are ways to help stay with a kind of sadha, faith, trust that eventually is needed. It's required, really, to be able to make the leap from coming from me and myself and what I want, what I don't want, to not coming from that place, to being able to let that go and be fully and consciously, but not become what I'm normally becoming. as I live my life. So again, it's not about my life in the future or my life in the past. It's about my life now, just in this moment. And so we use these simple things which are always present, like body feeling, like breath. As boring as possible is what we try to stick with, because it's too easy to get fascinated and distracted otherwise. So it's good to just stay with that which doesn't hold that much conceptual fascination or interest, but stuff that's hard to kind of stay with unless you, and therefore we remember, you know, really the point of this is the practice of staying with, you know, having attention which is continuous in this moment. So using the feeling of the feet on the ground, or the feeling of my breathing as I'm standing or sitting or walking or working, and sounds and sights and smells and body feelings as well, as tastes even for some people. Those five senses of the six that we look at in Buddhism are really, really useful to just start to get to know, to recognize and notice as we're living our lives, not just when we're sitting in meditation, but also just at times that we remember throughout the day, to notice that not only am I kind of talking to so-and-so and having to avoid the traffic on the street or this or that, but also right now, okay, that is sound that my ears are hearing, this is sight that my eyes are seeing, this is a smell that my nose is smelling. And why do we do that? Because it starts to, you know, help us to narrow down our actual experience of the present moment in a way where we're not getting lost in what it all appears to be and that what it all seems to mean, and the stories that that then initiates and the perceptions it all creates. We stay right at the raw experience of sight, sound, smell, feeling, taste, body, hearing, and then mental, our mental activity with all of that is the sixth sense. So it becomes easier once we start to be aware of the senses just as the senses. You also realize your mind is then taking all that and making a whole big life out of it, a whole big narrative, all the time, very fast. And it becomes easier to catch that, because we can't really see it, can we, very easily when we try to, because it's going so fast. And so we practice meditation to train our awareness to be a little quicker, to be able to see how the mind works. But using the senses as a way to just stay mindful in the present moment is where you can actually see, okay, yep, there's sight, my eyes are seeing a bunch of color and shape in front of me now, my ears are hearing some sound, subtle sound, my voice, the fan sound. There's some smell, there might be some taste, body is feeling some stuff, that's all pretty easy to sense. And then there's everything my mind is doing with all of that. Right? Tisara in a monastery, November, hot, Katina, Vajrapasana not here, da 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 da. Right? So then there's all of that. And so if I get into that, I'm sort of in it, caught. But if I just notice, that's like mental sensation, that's perception and proliferation, it's thinking. That's all it is, and just see, sight as sight, hearing as hearing, thinking as thinking, without going into the details. It's not because the details don't matter, we have to be involved with the details. But in practicing this way, it gives us a chance to notice just the mind. Mind is the mind, right? Because all of this, it seems like I am all of this stuff that I'm always feeling and thinking, but really, all of that's happening within consciousness. And so by actually being with the senses, in meditation and in life, then I can have a chance to notice that which knows all of this in the moment. It happens, it arises within the quality that we have to be aware. So awareness itself then becomes something which isn't conceptual, and it isn't something that we are believing in or some sort of vague, mysterious thing, but it becomes the most familiar thing we have. It's home. It's like the home button on these devices, like the iPad. That I have an iPad now, and you press the home button, and you come back to the home page. So that's probably a fairly silly and superficial analogy for something which is actually extremely profound. But it's like the home. You know, home is the mind itself, and we just keep getting lost in all of the various stories and memories and speculations that we have. So staying with the watching quality of the mind is the trick, and doing nothing consciously is a really skillful way to help to first of all discover how to do that, and then remind ourselves how and stay with it, you know, to deepen into it. And then it can become fun, can't it? Because practice then isn't something we're failing at. We've got to get going, and we've got to complete the task and succeed at it sometime in the future. But it's something that you can do at any time you remember, right now, because there's nothing to do. It's just, oh yeah, right, okay. Whatever the mind is conscious of, that's fine. It's just the stuff that you're conscious of. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad or succeeding or failing. Right? Pleasant or painful. But there's the mind, and then there's that. And we stay with the mind. We just notice that we have this quality to know, the knowing. And that in itself might not seem like much, but it's actually extremely profound. And especially if we trust it and stay with it and deepen into it, then it becomes more familiar and something which can become a refuge, something which we can stay with when things are going really badly, and then use to not get carried away by when things are going really well, because we notice, don't we, when we start to watch ourselves live and use the teachings to observe our own life, that what seems like pleasure, getting really excited and stimulated in some way or other, and feeling a lot of sensual pleasure, even if it's, you know, mental pleasure, isn't actually as truly pleasant as it seemed. Because when we go up and up and up, and we're up there, it feels great when you're up there, but then afterwards it goes down and we go down with it. And so you see the crash after the rise. As and also deeper than that, perhaps, as we start to do this, we get a sense of the essential peace of the mind itself, because the mind, you know, our own mind, not the Buddha's mind or Ajahn Chah's mind or Ajahn Viradama's mind, or, you know, but the mind, just this mind that all of us can touch into, is already okay in itself, right? It's just the stuff that's not okay is what we get caught in and identify with and believe in. And so when we do practice this, we're also practicing peace in a very profound way, because it's already all right. And that's something which is actually more truly pleasant, more truly kind of delicious than all the delicious stuff which we have in the past perhaps been wanting, you know, and appreciating. So almost like when you start to stop eating junk food and appreciating how good it feels to eat healthy food, and then suddenly, you know, carrots and undressed salad don't just seem like boring stuff. They actually feel really good because it's associated with a sense of peace and health in the body. And the stuff that used to be delicious, the Wendy's triple cheeseburgers or whatever it is, what is it, Tim Hortons? Tim Hortons something or others. I've never been in a Tim Hortons. But Wendy's or Burger King or somebody just bought them, so you'll be having some of that in Tim Hortons too soon. You know, that sounds really good. We have Dunkin' Donuts where we are. Dunkin' Donuts. And Munchkins. I used to like Munchkins. And they're really good for the first... for a little while. But... then it's not. So that's the up and the down. But actually, you even realize the really good is it's a stimulation. And the peace of not getting stimulated is in fact more delicious than the pleasure of getting stimulated, you know, by taste or by emotional stimulation, mental stimulation, physical stimulation of different kinds. So all the teachings about renunciation then get seen in a different light. They're not about running away from things because, you know, they're bad, but because they're ways of helping us discover and then stay with a greater happiness, which you can't have if you keep continually stirring things up. And eventually we don't have to avoid everything, but it just helps. At first we do, we need help. So we've got precepts around renunciation as well as precepts around ethical living. And those, of course, are the underpinning of it all, because if we don't live in a way where we're refraining from intentionally harmful actions towards others, towards ourselves, then we're not going to be able to experience that peace, because there will always be remorse, whether we're conscious of it or not. There will be remorse there, and it will tend to trigger neurotic patterns like guilt. It will it'll make it so that we don't want to settle down and we don't really want to see ourselves. And maybe we don't even know that that's what's happening. But that's one of the obstacles to meditation. And so that's why following the five precepts, following the moral guidelines, is not about being goody good Buddhists, but it's really a part of meditation practice. It's like it won't deepen truly until one's living in a way which is in harmony with the world, with and that means not intentionally causing harm towards ourselves or others. So it's all a whole. All the different teachings, and it's all of us. It doesn't let us get away with, you know, just leaving this little bit out. In the end, we've got to fully commit. But then the great thing is, you don't have to, you know, it's not like it's not like the way to practice means that unless you're 100% fully committed, you're not doing it. It's just that we do it as much as we can, whenever we remember, and that is moving us in the direction, so that full commitment comes as a kind of just a completion, in a sense, that happens to us as we've been just, you know, putting one step in front of the other along the way. And that's good to remember for idealistic Americans like me, and maybe some of you too, because it's easy to just say, right, okay, I've got to do it, I've got to just commit, and then we can get ourselves into all kinds of problems. And the other side of that is then not trying at all, because we just figure, oh no, there's no way I can do 100%. Okay, maybe next lifetime I'll just leave it on the shelf for now, because I'd rather watch television. So somewhere in the middle, it's the middle way. Somewhere in the middle, and then the middle way really then is not it's not a kind of mediocreness, but it's finding that way which is being with things where we're neither avoiding nor are we indulging in them. So you're not like that's not just things on the outside, but essentially it's things on the inside. So our emotional reactions, like anger, or despair, or elation, or whatever it might be, you know, that normally we think that we have to either, be angry, or we have to get rid of the anger, and that seems like the only two options. So we think practice means finding a way to make sure anger doesn't arise. Whereas practice, actually, in finding the middle way, is finding a way for anger to arise, but for us not to get angry. So that the anger can be there, but it's not that we are getting angry, because it's seen as the phenomenon that it is, that this is the feeling of anger. This is the mind, you know, getting, you know, the stories and things that come up with anger. And as long as I maintain, if I stay with the knowing of it, then I'm not angry. And that's the middle way, is that, and that's hard to, that's something we forget again and again, because it's really a hard lesson to get. But then once we do, it's very freeing, lesson to get, because it allows us the freedom to feel anything, and it's not, we're not doing it wrong, and we're not actually getting angry. We might feel the feelings that before meant we got angry, but actually now we just feel, oh, isn't it okay? Look at that, somebody said such and such, and now I feel, you know, hot, and my mind is kind of going on with the story. But if I'm able not to go with that, then I don't go along very far with the story, and it's just something that comes, it's there for a while, and then it goes, like bad weather coming through, you know, the clouds and the wind and the rain, and then they blow away and it's sunny again. We don't take that personally, and we don't necessarily need to take our own emotional life personally either, because it's not our fault. You know, all of us are caught in this enmeshment of habit and delusion, as it's called in the Buddhist teaching. Avicca, not knowing, ignorance. And so it's not, none of us, it's not our fault. And even if we have habits that we, you know, in quotes, we have created in the past, really just what's happening now, there's the mind knowing this. And this just has its own karma, its own, you know, history, reason for arising. And yet we don't have to take it personally. It's not who we are, none of it. And that's something we can get in touch with on a moment-to-moment basis. Just this moment now, being with the awareness, and not being, you know, me and my problems, me and my life. Even the whole project of enlightenment, right? The whole Buddhist path. Okay, yep, that's a narrative that arises in consciousness now. But actually, there's just this, and there's feeling, sight, sound, perception. Just now, putting it that way in words, it sounds pretty kind of sparse, doesn't it? Like, it's not very juicy. It's not very, it's not going to inspire that many people. Let's just become sight, sound, feeling, perception. It feels like you're not really being human anymore. But in my experience is that by practicing in this way, it has the opposite effect. It really allows one to come more in touch with one's, you could say, humanness, but it's like your heart. And then also see how we can be more present with all of ourselves rather than just that part of ourselves that we approve of. And it's not because it's not threatening. Anyone?